I'm a little upset with this poor start.
It's a little hot.
What's in it?
Homegrown lemongrass and hibiscus brought back from Jamaica. So that's actually a very Jamaican combination.
Tastes very nice. It looks
like a good alternative to coffee, because it's uplifting.
Mm. Cool. Should we get into it?
Ready?
Okay.
Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Wilder Podcast. In this episode, we sit down with chef turned homesteader Gaz Oakley. We talk about his leap from kitchens to growing his own food, the respect for ingredients that comes with working the land, and how reconnecting with nature has transformed both his well-being and outlook on life. Hello, Tom.
Hello. I don't know whether I need to mention the bit at the start before you start us beefing, Chloe, where we kind of bit of like outtakes from the chat. If I have to explain what happened during the outtake, does that mean it's probably a bad use of the audio?
I would think so.
Yeah. Okay. But that was just us. I think as we sat down, Gaz very kindly gave us his amazing tea that he'd made. And we talk about it a little bit in the recording. But it was just like, how welcoming is that when you come and have something homemade given to you that's special, that's been brewed with a specific purpose in mind. And then you sit down and start that conversation. And I just think before we go into the chat, it's probably just worth mentioning that I think people will listen to it and realize how relaxed everyone is throughout the whole conversation. And I blame his tea for that.
I think it also reflects the coherence across the whole episode, this idea of like, once you find your roots, your grounding, that ripples into all aspects of your life. And I think from that first sip of homegrown tea, it was that ritualistic element of relaxation, I think, that comes through in the conversation.
100%. Now, there may be people that are new to the podcast, Chloe, listening. And what I'd like to do, like we always do, is give a bit of a recap about who we are. Would you like me to go first?
Yes, please, Tom.
So we are Chloe and Tom, husband and wife. We run a thing called the Grange Project, which is a nature restoration project in South Wales. 2.5 years ago now, we decided to take things into our own hands when it comes to things about climate change and biodiversity loss and really educate ourselves and try and create an impact, however small, and drive change. And that's what inspired our purchasing of the Grange here and also starting the podcast, because we really were completely right at the top. Episode one, we were at the start of our journey. We had never grown anything. We didn't really understand the challenges associated with climate change or biodiversity loss and plastics and rivers. But what we did know is we've got a young family and we want to do what we can to ensure that they inherit the planet in hopefully a better state than it currently is in. So there's a lot more to it. There's ecopreneur angles, there's food production challenges, there's things along this journey that we're trying to approach. But in terms of top level headlines, that's who we are and that is what we are doing with the Wilder Podcast. Happy with that, Chloe?
You did an excellent job, Tom, as always.
It's the best part of my week there.
And I think perhaps that is reflected in our community day that's coming up on Saturday. It's probably too short notice for people to sign up at this stage, but I think it does give a little reflection of the sort of activities and perhaps the intention and the values that drive the project.
It's going to be great. It's going to be the biggest one we've done so far, I believe. Not that bigger necessarily always means better, but it just shows, I think, indicatively that our community is growing and there are lots of repeat offenders coming back and getting stuck in. We've got so many activities on that day that's new. What's interesting was each community day, as the project evolves, the activities are evolving. And at the start, it's all about defielding, pulling up hedge lines and allowing the project to set the conditions for it to go back to its more natural state. And now, after we've done a lot of that, we're now looking at more food production and kind of maintenance, aren't we?
And it's definitely seasonally affected as well. So this is I think it's the first community day we've done in September, which is in the middle of harvest. So that, I think, explains some of the activities that we're getting up to on Saturday. Would you like a little headline summary of what they are?
Yes, please. It's not like we've been talking about this every evening. Please tell me more about the events we're doing, Chloe.
Delighted. So we are very privileged to have 11 ancient apple trees here adjacent to the house on the project. And one of the key pillars of the Grange project is around food production. So we are delighted to have some support this year to be scratting and pressing probably maybe close to, I don't know, thousands of apples, I'm going to go with. That's probably a bit generous. But I mean, certainly we had a chest freezer full last year. And I'm just really glad that the abundant harvest can be shared with lots of other people and the joy of pressing in community.
Because historically, that's what communities did. They got together, they brought their apples and they pressed together. And people will be going home with ladles full.
I hope so.
Of apple juice, taking that home. Probably not in ladles, though.
I'm not sure that would be a convenient way down our bumpy drive, but anyway. And hopefully they'll also be laden with some products of their foraging, whether that's blackberries, sloes, damsons. We've got hedgerows that are groaning under the weight of the berries. And I hope they have destinations of many crumbles across the land.
Other very exciting opportunities or activities that we'll be doing is erecting our first market garden polytunnel, which is very exciting.
I slightly scared myself this morning because we were sitting in a playgroup with our two-year-old. And one of the ladies at the group said, oh, what size is your pony tunnel? And I looked around the hall and I said, I think it's about this size. It's going to be quite big.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh. I left you in charge of this one, Chloe.
Yeah. We could house someone in it if the worst comes to it.
Good. Well, we're building that or erecting that, which would be cool. We've got scything happening. We're scything down an area of the project to create a wood meadow, which is a thing that you're excited by and we're doing. I'm not really sure enough about it.
It is a really interesting type of habitat that doesn't really exist within the UK, which is, if you think about a traditional meadow, you think of flowers and grasses, which is lovely. But actually, historically, a wood meadow, you would have had trees interacting with that grassland. And the cool thing about that is then you get this symbiotic relationship between the trees and the wildflowers, where they keep them warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And it's actually much more before tractors how we would have managed traditional hay meadows, and actually examples of that in Eastern Europe where farming has not been as industrialized. So I'm assured by somebody I'm hoping to get on the podcast at some point that they are create this amazing habitat. And also what's lovely is it's a chance for us to be involved as people in helping to curate the landscape, which I do think is important alongside the more nature-led processes.
Yeah, and I'm a dutiful husband and therefore doing what you've asked. So that's good.
And we're also checking on the health of our trees, which is another important responsibility at the end of summer.
100%. Right, I am aware that this has probably gone on a little bit long. We were going to do a short top because we had an amazing conversation with Gaz, and it's kind of gone into, hopefully, something quite interesting. It's really shined a light upon the activities over at the Grange Project. But I think we should move across now to the conversation with Gaz. So Gaz Oakley, it was phenomenal to find out that he was so close to us when we moved here, and not only have the opportunity to explore him and the work that he does, but also get him to come around and meet him on numerous occasions. And I can confirm that he is as nice in real life as he does come across on all of his social channels.
And what I loved about this episode is not only does Gaz share his really quite personal story and journey, but he really touches on some really big themes, big systemic challenges. And he's got some really interesting insights that I think he's addressing in his messaging to his followers.
Let's get into it. Please excuse a slight interruption to the episode. We will go back to the interview in about 10 seconds. But if you're looking to escape the modern trappings and go to the centre of a nature restoration rewilding project in South Wales, then do think about our new cabins. They're sustainably built, beautifully placed, and quite literally the only thing that's going to disturb you are the birds in the morning. If you want to have a bit of a weekend escape, then feel free to go to our website, grangeproject.co.uk. In the top right corner, it says stay with us, and you can book for this season. Now back to the interview. Gaz, welcome to the Wilder Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a long time overdue.
It is. I think when we moved the area, somehow someone introduced us, didn't they? Then I was like, it's so good having you so close to where we are and what we're doing. At that moment in time, we're like, let's do a podcast together. But it's taken us now, to our shame, what, 2 years to find a date to make it happen?
Yeah, well, I think you're as busy as I am, if not more busy.
Well, you
got going on.
That's it. And you are about to come more busy, but congratulations on the imminent arrival of your first child. Did Chloe tell me your mum was following Gaz on social medias and she said that, were you engaged, are you?
Yes, yeah, we recently got engaged on my birthday. So yeah, it's all happening quite fast, but when you know, I think. That's one thing I've learned.
100%. I just like the fact that Chloe's mum was the one to tell us that.
Yeah, the postman came and knocked on the other door and they seemed to know the other day. Gets around when you have a big following on social media.
That's it. Gaz, would you like to describe where we are, just for the listeners, to where we're recording today? Because I think if Chloe and I tried to do it before we get into the full conversation, I think we wouldn't do it justice. So whereabouts are we today?
Well, we're in my kitchen at the minute in Wales. I call it my homestead now because I'm growing a lot of the food that we eat and using a lot of the plants that we grow in the form of medicine as well. rurally located, see the rolling hills over your shoulder there. And typically, being Wales, I'm on a hill as well. And so it is a bit challenging, but it's a very peaceful place and I feel very grounded here.
Yeah, and we're just inside this converted town hall that it looks and feels fantastic. You can't see a bit of plastic inside. It's just very natural around you. And the vibe of the whole place is, I think, does feel significantly different to that artificial environments as well. So that's setting the scene.
Thank you.
But in keeping with tradition of the podcast, Gaz, would you mind introducing yourself? For someone may not have come across you before. And what will you find yourself doing now?
Yeah, so my name is Gaz Oakley. In a previous life, I was a chef. I think I always will be a chef, but I left school 16 and became a full-time chef, having learned the skills after school when I was just 15 in these tough kitchens. That was my passion. That was my purpose for a very long time. I grew up in Cardiff. That sort of gave me a real sort of drive, actually, because it's such long hours. You need to put a lot of determination into making it a success. And I actually took a few years out of the industry, which led me to getting into health and wellness. I got a normal sales job at the time, and missing my purpose, I decided to start sharing my food and my recipes on social media, on Instagram. This was 9-10 years ago. Before I knew it, people from all around the world started following me. It was a weird feeling. I just wanted to show my friends and family really what I was eating and just share my passion. I reached about 7,000 Instagram followers, thought I made it.
Yeah.
Quit the job that I had at the time and just went full steam ahead at it. Thankfully, my parents let me move back into my old bedroom and really go after this newfound journey and passion of sharing my food on social media. That took me to thinking I could create a food show on YouTube because I'd watched cooking shows all my life. That was the most daunting, scary thing I'd ever done when the cameras started rolling. But after a few and sort of months practice, recording myself at home and getting a crew to come and help me, I started getting into it. And that was 9 years ago. I've now got 1.8 million followers on YouTube who tune in to watch my food show. I've done 5 cookbooks. And I've now ended up in the middle of nowhere in the countryside after living in London and cities all my life, because during COVID, I felt so reliant on all the systems around me. I felt a huge disconnection to where my food was coming from. Despite working in kitchens and understanding quality produce, I was a slave to sort of convenience, you know, when I was living in London, buying strawberries in plastic packaging in the middle of winter. I decided, toilet rolls running out on the supermarket shelves. Is it the food next? I was starting to get worried. So I thought I have to learn how to grow my food. It led me to moving out here. And the last 4-5 years of growing my food has changed my life in the most profound way possible. So yeah, that's a bit about me.
You know, what a fascinating story. And those threads of health, well-being, nature, food. Yeah, I feel like we're kind of at a start of a similar journey. So it's really nice to hear your experiences sort of slightly further down the line. I suppose taking us back to your childhood, how would you describe your kind of relationship to food and nature while you're growing up?
Well, food was always, I guess, quite healthy because my dad cooked at home every evening for the family. And that's what spurred me on to get into cookery. He really encouraged me and it was fun learning with him at home. I thought actually every kid did it with their parents. So that was a great way for me to express my creativity and share food with my family and see their delight. So that was my relationship with food. Went on holiday to France in the caravan quite often, and seeing the French food markets was fun, and seeing their relationship with food. And I was inspired by like Marco Pierre White and Gordon Ramsay on TV. Nature, though, I didn't have any connection. You know, I say that the only time I really connected with nature was in France on a beach, maybe, and taking my shoes off and touching the sand, or smelling the mud on my rugby shirt after playing a game. Oh, that's what the earth smells like. I had no connection. Seasons would come and go, wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. It wasn't something I'd think about as a kid growing up in a modern city in the 90s. It was, I want the latest pair of football boots. That would bring me happiness and joy. Or I really want this games console. Nature wasn't an outlet for me. I just knew a small garden and maybe, as I said, a trip to the beach on holiday. That was nature. Didn't think of it until I was 28 years old, until I moved out here. Yeah.
And I suppose, how would you describe your style of cooking prior to your, I don't know if I want to say the word reconnection for nature, you might have your own words that you want to use to describe it, but how has your cooking changed as a result of the change in your relationship to nature?
Cooking wise, well, actually leaving the industry after working in the kitchens for years, I had this sort of kind of health crisis. I was working 80-hour weeks from the age of 16. It is tough. And that led me to eating a more plant-based diet, well, fully plant-based diet. That gave me huge sort of energy and purpose and made me fall in love with cooking again when I'd left the industry. And that's why I started sharing the recipes on social media. However, I was very much disconnected where the food came from. I was, as I said, really just going after convenience and whatever was on the supermarket shelves. But now, since growing my food and foraging as well, now it's all about showing so much more respect for the ingredients because I understand the perseverance, the patience, the energy that goes into growing the food. Seasonality is so important. Everything tastes better when it's in season. When you forage something, that's like nature's gift. It's an offering from the gods in my thoughts, and you want to do that justice when you cook with it. So simplicity a lot of the time is making these ingredients shine. It's making sure that they nourish you in the best way possible and just showing much more respect for the produce.
That really resonates with me, that the two words you use there, the idea of respect, because having started our own journey of producing food up at the Market Garden, the hand hours and the love that goes into that food, but also the what it offers you back in terms of the nutritional benefits and the taste and the satisfaction, I guess, of going through that journey. And also that idea of nourishing. Like, I think as a society, we've lost the connection that food has for our well-being. And understanding that mix between how soil health influences the plant health, which then influences our own well-being from a physical and an emotional sense, is such a critical part of the story. And the foraging is even better because, you know, nature's picked that location to grow that particular whatever it is you forage, so you know it's going to be in the happiest place, which I think then the microbes are associated with that. I've got to be happier microbes, which presumably will then translate into your own well-being.
Yeah, but also that the meditative practice that comes with cooking anyway, you know, that was something that we would utilize as a family to bring us together, or just, you know, a quiet hour in the evening preparing your food. It's something that's lost. We spend so much money nowadays in the cities on Uber Eats and Deliveroo's, and we can't even cook for ourselves anymore. But when you do cook for yourself, even if you are living in a city and not growing your food, you see everything that goes into the pot. You end up cooking with more love. And when you cook with love, it tastes better. That's why your grandma's food always tastes so good.
Yeah, 100%. And then we're in this crazy culture where we're eating, you know, feeding ourselves with Uber Eats and then supplementing with things to make us feel good, whether that's, I don't know, advertised from the net. Well, and Netflix is actually the kind of self-medication of that. But even all the different supplements people buy in to fill the gaps in their diet because they're not eating the food that's the whole food that we need to keep us well.
Yeah. It's challenging because, you know, when I was working 80-hour weeks in the kitchens, you know, I did go for the fast food options on the way home from work at 11 at night. And that is an extreme case. It's not everyone works the life of a chef. I really want to use my platform to try and get to the 25-year-old me that was interested in cooking, but was still persuaded by convenience and wouldn't make the best choices for my health or the environment at the time. And if I can get through to him or my peers that I grew up with, that I caught up in the system, and just say, you know, cooking for yourself will save you some money. Turning your windowsill into a little herb or salad garden will provide you with some joy, or putting your name down to get an allotment will bring you beautiful produce that's going to nourish you, but also will bring you the most joy and entertainment in the evenings that you will love so much. And you'll spend less time watching Netflix or outsourcing your entertainment on other things that don't just give you that short-term gratification, you know?
Yeah. No, it's such a powerful story, isn't it? Because there's the joy, there's the well-being for ourselves at an individual level, but then obviously there's the planetary well-being, because everything you're describing around how you live here and how you source your food is also what we need to be moving towards to create a sustainable food system for us. It has wins on every level, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's hard, and I don't have the answers for this. In an ideal world, everyone would live like we did maybe even 100 years ago. You go to like the museums in Cardiff, St. Fagans, and you see like a 1900s house, and it's got a vegetable garden fully thriving. They had to grow food because supermarkets weren't around, and it saved you money by growing your own. But as you go down the sort of decades to like the 1980s or now, there's no food in the garden. It's been replaced with the trampoline or a manicured lawn or plastic lawn, you know. It's a shame. But with these major cities and people living on top of each other in big apartment blocks, industrial farming, it seems like is what's needed to feed that kind of lifestyle. But I don't know. I can only just go off what I've experienced. And when I was living in that ward, I was getting all of the symptoms of being disconnected and what I call a nature deficiency. I had anxiety, I had stress, I had depression at times. And since reconnecting and foraging, growing my food, hearing the birds, you shouldn't take that for granted. Hearing birds is such a luxury nowadays. But when it's just around you, when you're out in the garden, you know, picking your produce and you hear birds, it's like, it's calming, it's good for the nervous system. And I don't get any of those symptoms anymore.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, you said that you moved to the country during COVID time because you were concerned about food supplies or supply chains, which again, I completely resonates with me as well. But I'm also curious to know when you felt or when you realized that actually what being out here was increasing the nature connection. So I guess at the time you moved, before you moved out here, you weren't aware that you were deficient in it. So what was it, like an epiphany? Was it over time? And how did that make you feel?
It's been quite profound actually, because I just thought I was coming out here to grow a few bits of food, a few cucumbers, tomatoes. And although I did sow about 100 seeds in one raised bed when I first moved in, only a radish survived, but it was delicious. And it did make me realize that I am able to grow something and some food. I realized I was sort of nature deficient probably actually 3 years into it, 3.5 years into it. And realizing that and having all these sort of epiphanies and realizations has been actually kind of jarring for me. It's been like, oh, I missed out on so much. I did so many stupid things in my 20s, chasing after materialistic possessions or these quick thrills, drunken nights out. You know, that's what you did when you in your early 20s in Cardiff. But I was lacking something internally. I was lacking a sense of grounding, but there's no role models to tell you any different when you're caught up in the modern way of living, I guess. Nowadays, as my plants grow, my roots actually are getting stronger with them, which is amazing to feel. And I'm not a big thinker, really. But this is making me think of life in a more spiritual way. It's making me think of life after death. It's making me think how disconnected a society we are and how much of an alien I feel when I go to a modern city now. It's really strange. And even things like the music I listen to is completely changed in the last 4 years. Yeah, and I'm trying to understand and figure out why. I think I'm getting there to understand that, but it's making me feel more true to myself and whole and more human, whatever that means.
I can fully appreciate that. And out of curiosity, because I know the listeners will be wanting to ask this, where's your music taste kind of gravitating towards?
Yeah.
What genres?
It's a very sort of healing music, I would say. It's music that complements the nature sounds and the natural sounds. Mm-hmm. I think when you're in cities, your nervous system is constantly in fight or flight because of the chaos, because of the fast pace of traffic or people around you or the sirens or the, you know, the loud noises. You consume, or I was consuming, very sort of fast-paced electronic heavy music with, you know, maybe lyrics that weren't sort of uplifting. Nowadays it's music like beautiful acoustic folk or handpan or African guitar or Ethiopian piano. It's like or Celtic flute. It's weird, isn't it? But it is music that complements the walks in the woodland, out gardening. It makes you feel at peace. You only want peace when you're around peace. And that's been a case in the music I listen to. It's weird.
We are obviously a lot earlier on in our journey than you are, but I have noticed that slightly with the music. Sometimes the music kind of gravitates onto more classical or Ludovico Einaudi kind of piano stuff. And not before, I would have moved it on, skipped it or whatever, but I just found it more and more that I just left it playing. And you're right. I think it does enhance or supplement a feeling, I think, when you're out here.
When I was looking into it, there is a thought that when you do connect to nature, you do become a little bit more wild and in tune. You also connect with your sort of ancestral roots, you know, that is reflected in the music. Music is so important to humanity. That's why, like, Ibiza and the raves are so, you know, it's everyone gathered around this person playing music, but that is almost replicating, you know, your community. You get around the campfire while you're drumming, you know, it's that feeling of connection that humans so crave. And music is very powerful. I think it's not something we should be consuming without understanding the subconscious feelings that can occur if you're not listening to quite the right music.
Now, it's really interesting. You're talking about this idea of becoming more whole and that being reflected. I guess when you get coherence, then that coherence starts to be reflected in all aspects of how you live, from the how you eat, where you spend your time, what you listen to, who you want to surround yourself with in terms of relationships and people. And perhaps that speaks to that innate need that we all have, which I think a lot of us are divorced from, to have that connection with nature and the land, because from an evolutionary psychology perspective, that was obviously what would have kept us safe, is having understanding and being in tune with the natural environment is what we needed to survive, let alone to be whole and thriving.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, relationships wise, you know, I put down to connecting with nature to the reason why I've met Tegan, and, you know, we're engaged now, we're having a baby. You know, I was terrible in relationships, really, throughout most of my life. And it's because I wasn't grounded. I wasn't comfortable in my skin. I wasn't where I'm at now. And that's probably why everything's moving so quick on the Antiguan.
Again, from our journeys as well, finding purpose grounds you, doesn't it? And I think that's what you're describing there, is you found your purpose, you're now grounded. You're not feeling like you need to compete with people the whole time. You're just happy. I think that helps you make good life decisions.
One of the things I'm really appreciating about our conversation so far, Gaz, is that I think sometimes when people have made big changes around how they live, it's easy to be a bit preachy about that way of being and sort of say, oh, this is how everyone should be living to get these benefits. But you're really sensitive to the challenges of the system and how hard it is for people who are living in these really urban environments to step into a different way of being. And also, what I'm hearing is you've got a desire to perhaps influence that system. And essentially, you are a role model in your social media following and how people are connecting to your journey, and people can influence in different ways. So being a role model is one, and perhaps, you know, working to influence policy or doing research, there are other ways that you can try and influence system change. But I suppose I'm really curious, what is it like to have that many followers and to have a sense of a kind of audience around you? And does that ever feel like a burden in communicating your journey, or does that feel like a privilege?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I've been doing it for 9 years now, and it is still as weird as it was when, you know, when I first started gaining this following online. And it only feels really real when I do like an event, an in-person event, and I see these people that have been watching me that know me, and I've never seen them in my life. It's very weird, but I do need to always understand that I have a sort of duty of care, I guess, when I'm sharing my journey, my story. And I have to understand that when I'm sharing the how-tos, not everyone is in a position to do it. And I'm fortunate and privileged to have been able to work remotely and pack up London and move off to the countryside and have this sort of awakening. You know, not everyone has that opportunity. So I do always have to check that privilege. But my goal is to make it as accessible as possible. And if, you know, you can't do what I've done and do it on this level of extreme basis, you know, explaining that, yes, you can get an allotment, or you can grow a load of food on a small balcony. And that's something I should have done when I lived in London. I didn't realize I could, but you can grow lots of food on a balcony. And that bit of work sowing seeds will bring you so much joy, despite maybe being five stories up. Harvesting those beautiful tomatoes on a sunny summer evening in the middle of London is what I feel is revolutionary. So yes, these acts and this platform that I have, I want to encourage people to join this revolution. I think it's a silent revolution. It's a big FU to the corporations just growing one thing on a windowsill, or not giving your money to Deliveroo or the supermarkets and go into a local farmer's market. You don't have to grow food. You don't have to leave the city. You can go for a walk in the local woodland for entertainment. It's just about trying to do the more natural thing, and you can boycott the systems doing something very peaceful.
Mm. Yeah, we are now influencers now with our podcast and our amazing 5,000 Instagram followers, just saying, humble brag. And, you know, we are getting, and it's wonderful, you know, the occasional message from people that are following our journey. And it is great. We love it every single time. But I can imagine once it gets to the millions of followers, you getting quite a few messages. And like, I'm just interested in how you manage your headspace between having this very idyllic, peaceful life where you're growing and you're cooking and you're being at one with nature, but also you're managing a digital profile and the trappings that come with that.
Yeah, it's a battle I'm having in my head constantly now. But yeah, I do get a lot of messages, and one of them was from my now partner. So yeah, anyways, I think that it's definitely made me reassess what I want in the future. I do love the filmmaking process. I love uploading these films on social media. I love inspiring people. This morning I was out in Abergavenny, just walking through the park and sharing five bits of, well, weeds really, that ancient medicine. And I can't wait to edit that together and upload it and share it and tell everyone what they've been walking past all their lives without realizing. So it's fun having that. It's almost like an art gallery, an online art gallery, and I'm sharing my art. So I do enjoy that process. But with that comes a ton of admin that I don't want to have to be doing nowadays. It's all the sort of digital stuff that pulls me away from the beauty in life. And that is nature to me and being outside. So I think going forward, especially as we grow as a family, I've realized that I need to be doing more in-person things and connecting with people. So connecting with my audience, but not through a screen, through in-person events. So that will come in the near future, whether I do a course or a retreat at your place one day. Huh. Or maybe one day, you know, I'll be lucky enough to get some actual land and I'll be able to do a cookery school or have a market garden, where that will be the sort of way in which I share my message rather than the sort of digital stuff that is a bit messy and not fun at times.
Yeah. Chloe and I are discussing constantly the kind of, should we come off social media? Should we stay on social media? And it's that push-pull of you want to influence, you want to drive positive change. The way you achieve that predominantly is hit people where they're at, not where you want them to be. And it's, but then it affects your brain and the way you know, your levels of zen, for lack of a better term. So it's an interesting balance. So it's interesting hearing you say that.
I feel like I'm now a messenger. I've got a message to share to the modern world, and I've got to use the modern platforms to share that message. These modern platforms like YouTube have taught me, and they've taught me how to grow my food, and they teach me so much about herbalism and all the things that I'm so passionate about these days. So I must help that area. And there's so much chaos and mind what on social media and YouTube nowadays. So if the work that I share is antidote to that, then I have to keep going. So I'll always upload and make films. To what capacity? I think that will change as I develop and I'll get land and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're not showing videos of yourself up unboxing Shine clothes. You know, we need a balance. Otherwise, all that content will just be overwhelmed with the messages that are perhaps more destructive to our well-being. So mm-hmm. I think it's really critical. And, you know, we can feel your passion and just, you know, you kind of took us for a little tour of the garden. And as you were talking about some of the herbs and their uses, you know, you can feel the connection you have with them. And that comes across through that digital medium as well, I'm sure. So, you know, we need good storytellers to help us tell different stories that we need to reimagine a society where well-being of people and planet is at the core.
The herbs have so many stories locked within them that are making me feel like I'm connected. And, you know, there's that saying, what is a tree without roots? And I was blown in the wind for so long, despite, you know, having a great, you know, family growing up in Cardiff, identity, you know, the Welsh identity, you know, that meant a lot to me. But really, I wasn't connected to the land. I was on concrete all my life with rubber shoes. Nowadays, as you know, every time I learn about a herb like the southernwood, the kola plant I shared with you, or the mullein or yarrow, each one has a story that links my generation, me, to the people before me. And there's just a missing link from that old ways to me now. And as I learn it, it's like I'm downloading this wisdom and the story, and it's making me feel closer to self and more whole as a result.
Is that going to be your next book, Gaz? Stories of Herbs?
That would be, it'd be a big book as well. And it would be a fascinating one. I'm scratching the surface. I need to learn so much more about it. It'd probably be something that I release when I'm old and grey, you know? It would be something that I've built up over time. And I'm actually really excited to get wiser and more knowledgeable about this stuff because it's fascinating. It really is fun.
Yeah. It's true knowledge, isn't it? Which is nice. So let's move slightly on to slightly more practical questions, because I'm just fascinated by having walked around your kind of market garden, veg patch here and the land. Could you firstly describe the size of it and what you've done to it from a food production perspective, and then how much of the food you're eating is actually produced by the garden?
Yeah, when I first moved here from London, having no space whatsoever, I thought I was moving to a gigantic farm. But I've got a decent sized garden. Actually, it's really challenging because it is very steep and hilly with a big woodland next to it that is not mine, but it soaks up most of the water that I give to my crops, especially now with such a sort of lack of rain. I always over exaggerate, I feel, just when I really think about how much we actually eat. Because I eat plant-based, you know, it's more so than others. I don't have to sort of bring in protein other than a sort of lentils and chickpeas and beans and stuff like that. But 100% of the veg, you know, I eat is from the garden, pretty much. You know, like right now I'm picking blackberries constantly to fill up my freezer so I don't have to go and buy berries throughout the winter. So I would say it's anywhere right now in the middle of the summer between 70 and 90, but then in the winter it's sort of like 20 to 40. Depends what I've stocked up. And I make a lot of ferments and freeze a lot and dry lots. So it's not enough, really. I want to be 100% self-sufficient. You know, I grow about 300 onions that will last me all year. I grow all garlic for all year. You know, I grow enough pumpkins to fill up the freezer to eat all year. Potatoes got all year. This kale constantly, so I've got my greens. I'm experimenting now with, and tomatoes, I'll eat all year because I'll ferment them. And I'm experimenting here though. I'm realizing this isn't a space to grow 100% of my food. It's not big enough. But I'm learning what I can grow for when I do get the land, I'll be able to grow enough quinoa to last all year round. Amaranth, lentils, split peas, beans. Beans is something that I grow in a lot of to dry and keep throughout the year. You know, to be 100% self-sufficient, you need a bigger space. I think you need only about an acre and a half of flat land, really, if you're smart with it, especially if you utilize foraging as well. But it's important then, the things that you do buy, it's like, how can I go to the supermarket less and buy responsibly? So it's all the sort of lentils and the grains that we do buy. We buy in bulk and in biodegradable packaging or from the zero waste store, then you're not having to go to the supermarket as much as well. That's a bit of a long-winded answer. I do apologize.
No, I think that's...
It fluctuates. I'm really craving. I'm going to be very extreme when I get extra land, and I don't want to go to the supermarket at all if I can help it. Mm-hmm. That is definitely possible in Wales.
I think that's exactly the right answer you just gave. It was, you know, it's very easy to give a very kind of flippant answer, but what people want to hear is that the realities of what you're doing. What Chloe and I have learned recently with our market garden that we're trying to do for the first time ever and do some proper growing is it is phenomenally time intensive. How much time would you say, if you are bringing in, someone's listening to this thing and I want to do something that Gaz is doing, like how much time do you think you need to set aside? Again, it depends on the time of year, I'm sure, but to manage the veg you're growing here.
Yeah, it is time intensive if you do it on the scale that you're doing at. I know your garden's brilliant. You know, you've got more than more than like 20 different plants growing, which is a lot of different needs. I always would tell people to just try and grow five of the things that you buy from the supermarket the most. And, you know, a lot of the time that is like kale or blueberries. And if you focus on those five and you become an expert on those five, they don't necessarily become too much of a stress. When you start broadening your horizons and you add in tons, you know, it does become more work. You know, in springtime, I'm sowing seeds constantly. But I can't wait for that time. You know, it's a long day of work doing my videos or whatnot and meetings and things. And then in the evenings, it's sowing seeds. Or it's one full day to sow tons and tons of seeds. this year, I've really struggled with having enough time. So I've been away so much. I just released a book and I've been traveling so much and it's been tough. And the garden is, you know, is sort of looking a bit distressed and sad at the minute because of that. And I'm sad about it. But, you know, sometimes you can't devote the time. But generally, I would estimate that I would spend one full day, like, and I mean a long day from sunrise to sunset almost, on, and that's enough to, you know, make sure that the garden's under control.
Now, or, that's per week, is it?
Yeah, per week. Or it'd be like a half an hour in the evening. And I think that what I've realized is they're the most joyous times of the whole week. I'm itching to do that. I would be in there all day long. The best fertilizer is a gardener's shadow, they say. And that's true because, you know, you're constantly seeing what the garden needs. And that's what people don't realize is, oh, they think, oh, I haven't got the time to start this hobby of growing food. But when it becomes your main hobby and your joy, then you will make time for it because you all you want to do is that. So then you'll save money by not sort of spending money doing silly things like going out drinking doing cheap quick thrills. You'll spend more time in the garden and it's uplifting, it's fun, it's entertaining. So it's not work. It is time consuming, but it's not work. It's fun, it's therapy, it's a sanctuary.
And I think what you mentioned earlier on in the conversation was around the role of allotments and community gardens. And I think not only do you get the benefits there of producing food and all the well-being associated with that, but you also get that sense of community. And once a week, we have a Market Garden Volunteers Day. And again, they're like one of my favourite days of the week because people are coming together and you have that shared sense of purpose. And it's such a joy that everyone leaves kind of laden with food. And we also eat together. And I think that's a really important part of the day. And it's just, yeah, lovely seeing people coming together for that shared purpose.
Yeah, that's something that I'm craving and I'm really needing. You know, I get messages and emails all the time asking people, could they come and learn? Could they come and volunteer? I think, and when I get my land, I'll have a whole workforce. It's going to be great. I don't have that space right now. I mean, it takes you 5 minutes to walk around the garden and there's, you know, this, I can manage it when I'm not flying around and doing tours to promote the book and things like that and share my message. But when I do have the land, I'll have a more of a community aspect and people helping me out and it won't be as challenging. And yeah, you're right. It's that's how you learn. It's tangible when you get your hands on it in the soil and they reap the benefits, they take home produce. What you're doing is life-changing because, you know, you're sowing seeds metaphorically for people to then, you know, go home and think, oh, I actually got a bit of, I've got a space, I can have a few buckets in the garden growing food, you know, just from seeing how it's done at your pace and a bigger scale.
And people bring their wisdom too, because I'm all like, we are the first to say that we're at the start of our learning journey and one of the volunteers comes along and says, oh, my grandfather used to do it like that. And I'm like, okay, let's try that. We've talked a bit about perhaps the different rhythms of your life here in terms of food production since you moved out of the city. What are some of the other differences in how you live your daily experience now that you're here compared to urban living? For example, we're talking a lot about some of the herbs and the medicinal uses. And I suppose I wonder about that aspect of, because there's obviously food production to feed us from a calorie perspective, but there are also other ways to nourish us. And I wondered a bit about that.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to do wherever possible is sort of deindustrialize the things I consume. And you know, I'm not perfect at all. You know, I just talked about going on a tour and promoting the book, but I took that on as a sort of mission to share my story in person. I think I hopefully inspire quite a lot of people along the way. But, you know, everything from, we talked about the medicinal plants, it's like, if I can learn about the healing benefits of these weeds or these plants that we grow to treat mild ailments at home, well, that means I don't have to go and buy ibuprofen or paracetamol or take these kinds of pharmaceuticals and they're gentler on the system. When I was feeling these signs of nature deficiency with stress and anxiety and depression, I was prescribed beta blockers and antidepressants at the on a whim, you know. And, you know, as someone that was out of the loop, I just said, okay, I wish someone told me about lemon balm to calm me, which just grows literally like a weed in the cracks of the pavements. And, you know, actually the process of processing the herb itself, turning it into a tea or hanging it in your house, and it makes the place look beautiful to dry, and then you brew a tea, that's actually just very ritualistic and calming anyway. And then you get the benefits of the plant too, or we make them into tinctures. So yeah, it's not just growing food, it's medicinal plants, it's learning about the wild free foods in the form of foraging. It's changed the clothes I wear. You know, I used to wear the pleather shoes or the polyester t-shirts without thinking. You know, it's just, oh, that's a t-shirt, or they're the shoes. You know, now I wouldn't ever wear them, or I wouldn't buy them. I may have a few left over my wardrobe, but if I am wearing a t-shirt like that or shoes like that and they end up on my compost heap for whatever reason, they're never going to add to the soil. They're just going to be there and pollute forever and ever. So being in that cycle of growing food, of nurturing the plants and being in nature and seeing things decompose in my compost pile, the last thing I want to do is do anything that harms that. And I do now feel that humans can live quite happily, just like an animal would, on a patch of land, being in a cycle, and you'll reap the benefits of it too. So that's kind of where I'm at mentally.
So sadly, it looks like we're coming to the end of this conversation. I feel like I've been in like a Zen meditative state while just having this chat. Yeah, it is the tea. Yeah, which is delicious. Thank you. I also wanted to mention, just because I feel like it's important, that I'm looking forward to my wardrobe wearing out so then I can start just looking more like you, Gaz, to be honest. Because
it's all secondhand stuff.
But I just think it's so true, isn't it, in terms of, you know, I think if you're wearing it all day long, if you want it to feel natural, I think it makes sense. So my final question, if you guys don't mind me having the last question, is what advice would you give that individual? I think you've already given definitely a number of kind of suggestions, but like, you know, someone listening to this, they've been inspired, which like I have after this whole conversation, what are the simple steps or the steps you would recommend that they could start taking to becoming more zen and more connected?
Yeah, I guess we'll frame it for someone living in a modern city then. And you can't leave the city and just get up and move out somewhere more rurally. I think there's so many things you can do. If you want to get into growing food, then we've got tons of resources out there nowadays. YouTube is amazing. I learned the basics from watching some of my heroes now. And now my friends, actually, people like Charles Dowden, Hugh Richards, Moth and Ali, there's so many people on there that upload free content for us to watch. And put down Netflix, watch some YouTube where you're going to learn stuff. But there's books too as well, which you can read. Then that may sort of get you encouraged to join a community growing space or volunteer at your place or a farm like it. There's so many places where you can donate your time to take home a load of veg and learn a skill at the same time and meet like-minded people, and it becomes a lovely sort of hobby. You know, if you want to take some action right away and you have a sunny windowsill, grow some microgreens, grow some herbs, grow some salad. If you've got a sunny window or a bay or a porch, put some tomato plants in there. They're less sort of, you know, house plants. I've got a few house plants and they're harder to look after than tomatoes. Really are. And tomatoes actually give you something. They give you some food. So yeah, just make use of a sunny place outside of your house or in front of a sunny window. Failing that, you know, and you want to take it to the next level, put your name down on that allotment list. There are long waits for certain ones in busy cities, but if you don't put your name down, you're never going to get it. So definitely do that. And one thing I love about allotments is they tend to cost about £100 a year for a decent space, probably a bigger space than what I grow on because I'm on this hill. And you've got an amazing network of people that have been growing all their life to learn from around you. Then, you know, maybe you do have a bit of a garden, or I should say, if you do have a bit of a garden, turn your lawn into a farm. I don't know why I do know why we make our lawns like golf greens. It's ridiculous. Even my dad, it doesn't matter how much I bang on about this, he wants to cut his grass every other day. It's silly. It really is silly because lawns are just desert, really. They don't offer anything for biodiversity. And we could be growing a ton of food. And I heard that it comes from French aristocrats a few hundred years ago, and they were just sort of competing to show off how much sort of wealth they could just throw away with these sort of pristine lawns and show how much, you know, wasted land they could have. And then it was sort of then the pinnacle for the sort of modern middle-class family. Look, oh, I've got a picket fence and a nice green lawn. And then, yes, I think a lot of men do take pride in cutting their grass, and women, but I think we could be utilising that space to save us going to buy supermarket veg. And then it's organic as well. So there's that. I think we live in a very individualistic mindset nowadays, including my family. My sister and I, we both went off our separate ways when we left the home, and we're on our own. We don't have any sort of, you know, financial backing. We just have to try and make something of ourselves. And it's hard when you're just doing it alone, but many cultures all around the world, they will share assets with family. So in order for me to get land, this land that I speak of so much, I think that may be a case. We may have to team up with my parents-in-laws or my family just to come together and share our assets to try and get some land, because it is expensive. So that's another way that could potentially get your hands on a growing space. And then failing all of that, you know, you can just grow some mushrooms in a bathroom. And it's not buckets, you know, oyster mushrooms grow beautifully well. They're so cheap to grow. It is a constant cycle. So that's something you can do to be more self-sufficient. And just going back to an earlier point, is just cooking for yourself or sourcing your food from better places than the supermarket and buying in season, connecting with a farmer that grows food locally. Think about where your lunch is coming from. Don't just go for that plastic package thing. Can you cook for yourself? Can you meal prep? Just these little thoughts that we just always go for the convenient option nowadays. It's just trying to get outside of that mindset, and we all reap the benefits of it. And we vote with our money, don't we? So I'm trying not to give my money away to the places that don't do the best things with it.
Well, I think that's a very, very good thought for the closing of the podcast. Thank you very much for inviting us into your home, showing us around your garden, and making the time to share your kind of knowledge and wisdom you've gained over the last lifetime, but certainly over the last 9 years or so.
Well, thank you. No, it's a pleasure. And I'm grateful that you're my neighbours doing amazing things around the corner. And you know, whenever I have people visiting and have people down, I tell them your story of, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. I'm not just surrounded by these sort of factory farms and arid landscapes of just degraded pasture land. There's young couples and families like yourself around the corner from me, you know, turning this barren landscape into something that future generations are going to appreciate and take so much from, and nature's going to thrive there too. And I need more people like you, especially if I'm on a little garden like I am now, because there's nowhere for the bees and there's nowhere then for the birds as well to feed on. They're destroying my guy. I'm surrounded by these barren landscape. You're not quite close enough to me yet. So the more people are doing what you're doing, it means that the little gardens like mine aren't sort of taken advantage of by the nature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to say it just because as we were listening back to the interview, Chloe, and right at the end, I was talking about wanting to dress like Gaz. It made you laugh. So I'm going to say, before you say it, there was a bit of a bromance going on. I've got to say, maybe it was just one-sided. It probably was. In fact, it's not even probably. it was. But that kind of aura that comes off him, the philosophy that he is developing, he's developing it as he goes along, and the principles he is enacting in everything he does in his day-to-day life seems to be working. And I want a bit of that.
I think you're probably one amongst many, Tom, that have a bit of a bromance with poor Gaz. But I think what I find interesting about that point, though, is there's something about his role as both a kind of role model and a messenger. And I think it's really important for us in society to have these people who can provide us a template of a different way of being. And what I think is really authentic about Gaz is that is him to his core. Like, there's no pretense, there's no dressing up for the camera, for want of a better phrase. I think the reason people are drawn to him, because it does really come from a value set inside him, which then ripples out into all his passion and his communications.
After the top of this podcast, where we started to talk about our 2,000 square meter market garden and our inappropriately large polytunnel.
I haven't seen it yet.
I know, but the way you're describing it, if you're looking nervous now, then I know that this is a large polytunnel.
I'm just preparing you for the inevitable.
And the amount of work this is going to take to maintain.
Don't, Tom. Let's move on.
And Gaz talking about his garden, which is, you know, it's a good sized garden, and he's done a lot with a challenging space. But I do feel like that was probably quite a sensible choice for him, because it became a manageable space to allow him to grow and learn as he goes along. And like he says, he's then going to take that knowledge going forward, as opposed to us who have just gone...
jumped in the deep end, one might say.
Yeah, that would be the polite way of saying it. All the interesting challenges that come along with it.
One thing I've been reflecting on ever since we recorded the conversation with Gaz is when you become more, I'm going to use that word again, coherent or whole or, I don't know, rooted in yourself, the more secure you are in your values and who you are. I wonder about how many more challenges that presents when essentially society around you exists in kind of dissonance with that. So you kind of rub up against the edges of other way of being, whether that's in conversations with people, whether that's in the adverts that you find around you in city, enter into a city living, whether that's in going past a fast food outlet, I don't know, whatever the context is. And I wonder whether when you become more rooted in yourself, does it become easier to coexist alongside those spaces because you're secure in who you are? Or is it actually more painful to see evidence around you of essentially a society that is so unaligned with your philosophy and way of being?
Do you want an example of that recently?
Yes, please.
So for my sins, I was on the way back from a very, very cool bushcraft course. That wasn't my sin part. But I stopped off for some food and we hadn't, you know, it'd been a bushcraft thing. So we were pretty hungry and we went into the
squirrel didn't quite cut it.
The squirrel wasn't quite right. And went into McDonald's for the first time. I've not been in McDonald's for probably 10 years. And I was shocked and appalled would be probably too strong a word, but something between that and surprised to find banks of tablets for children. So now if you go to McDonald's, you can buy the food and you don't even have to parent your children. You can just sit them in front of the screen and allow them to plod away on it.
That's got a metaphor for something, hasn't it? And I wonder when you had that experience, did it leave you feeling like you needed to do something about it? Like it rubbed up against your way of being and seeing the world? Or did you just think, oh, yeah, that's not part of my culture and being, so it doesn't affect me as much?
No, interestingly, I've been thinking about that. I think when things like that happen, I feel a small percentage of the weight transfers across to me on it when I see something like that. It's a tiny percentage, but it all builds up and kind of sits on my heart, I think would be the best way I can describe it, where you just know that's wrong on every level and you're desperate for like not to be the case and for something to change, but you're in a position where you're not going to change that. So, you know, part of it is probably offloading onto the podcast, using it as a therapy session. So it's now out there in the world and other people can have the extra degree of weight on their heart. You're welcome, everybody. But also, I'm hoping that stimulates awareness and debate and discussion from the listeners so that I wasn't aware that was a thing. It's now a thing. Probably not a good thing for our children.
And that connects back to Gaz's point about the FU to the corporations and making choices about where we do spend our time, our attention, our money, because those are all little opportunities for social activism. Maybe next time you'll make a choice not to go to McDonald's because of that factor.
I feel so guilty now. I didn't realise until I turned around and I saw it.
You've let yourself down, you've let me down.
I've let Gaz down.
You've let the children down.
Oh, no. Right. Well, this has been a bit of an awesome kind of roller coaster, a journey of an episode. I hope you listeners have really, really enjoyed this. If you wouldn't mind, if you have enjoyed this and you want to do just a little monochrome of support for the project, just stop what you're doing, quickly get your phone out on whatever app you're listening to this on and give it a quick rate and review. On Spotify, it is super quick. You don't even have to write words. It's just click the number of stars. And on Apple, you can write some words to support it, but that really does make a difference for us. If you want to get involved with the Grange Project, look at the show notes. There's loads of links for all the things we're doing, signing up to the newsletter or our funky WhatsApp, which is if you just go to grangeproject.co.uk/WhatsApp, it'll take you to our community. And that's where you can keep up to date with all the key announcements, courses, and shenanigans that goes on around here.
So on that note, thank you very much to everyone for listening and hopefully catch you next time.